who achieved the great things and had the smoothest possible run to it with no hurdles at all. I mean, let's take Joseph, for instance. Joseph, great dreams when he was a lad. Bullied by his brothers. Sold as a slave. Does quite nicely till some lady takes a fancy to him. Finishes up in prison. Has some dreams. He's able to interpret dreams. And eventually is the Prime Minister of Egypt. Smooth passage, would you say? Moses? Moses. Well, bit of an iffy start in a basket on a river. Only just survives with life. Then finishes up very smart place, you know. Egypt's best palace for a while. Till he makes a little mistake. And then 40 years in the desert as a shepherd, which I think he quite enjoyed. And then suddenly God wants him back at the age of John Allert or something like that. And he finds his big chance comes. Paul, nice smooth passage for Paul. What did he say? 5 times beaten with rods. 39 lashes, half a dozen times. Left for dead a few times, the odd shipwreck. You haven't thought of somebody, have you?
Samson.
You think Samson was a winner, do you? I think, I'm not sure about that. Meddling with those women seemed a little bit dodgy to me. Anyway, the point I'm making is that we should always be clear that almost invariably, if God's got somewhere where he's taking us, there's usually a process to go through. And we should not be afraid of the processes. So, you know, this morning what Janet said about being hemmed in a box, I'm feeling the same. I'm trying to work out, you know, am I just tired? Is illness getting at me? Am I getting old? To which I resist them all. But you've got to be honest, haven't you? You've got to be real. But at the other hand, I know what God's doing. And I think, I just want to encourage us all that if you haven't quite got where you're going yet, don't get worked up about it. Because, you see, I believe God gave me that prophetic word back in 2007 that he said I was going to enter the greatest fight of my life and I'd win every round. Now, the downside to that is this fight's going to have some rounds. So I can't get worked up if I haven't got my miracle yet. Because there's processes going on. Because that's what God said would happen. But you see, in every process, in every fight you fight, you achieve something. Something grows within you. And your expectations grow for next time. And you're a bigger and better help to everybody else. So I just want you to have that in mind this morning. As we're thinking about where we're going. And as we explore some of the answers to prayer that God is giving us thus far that aren't complete answers yet. Dave's is not a complete answer. We have prayed for that psoriasis for decades. And to be honest, it was a passing prophetic word the other night. And that's all it was. It was a sort of, oh, and by the way, I think. And then he comes this morning saying, you know, it's going. It's going. It's going. And we have to keep pursuing, but it's going. But at the same time, he's off work, and that doesn't suit Dave, we all know that, with a fairly serious infection. Process is going. We'll hear from Jeff in a few minutes, because that's interesting as well. Totally different question, but similar. Do you ever put yourself into the biblical stories? Have you ever imagined yourself amongst the disciples that time when there were 5,000 families looking for something to eat? And Jesus said, what are you going to do about it? Jesus was a bit like that sometimes. He didn't say, come on, guys, I'm going to do a miracle. He said, come on then, what are you going to do about it? Because they're hungry and they're going somewhere. And have you ever imagined what it might have been like where Andrew turns up and he says, well, there's this boy and he's got 5 loaves and 2 fish. But what's that? But have you ever imagined what it must have been like as Jesus said, well, sit them all down then, groups of 50, and start distributing the lunch. Have you ever thought what that must have been like? Because it's a story in the Bible, isn't it? It's a story in the Bible. But have you ever thought what it must have been like? You've got these dozen disciples, and suddenly, every time they give something away, they've still got some more. And then at the end of it all, just to round it all off nicely, they've got a basket full of rubbish, each a basket full of crumbs. And have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought yourself into that story? Come on, you must have done, surely. Or what about when you're in the temple, following behind Jesus, and there's a man there, and everybody knows that that man has never, ever seen. Because he's always there. He's always begging. He's been blind all his life. Everybody knows that because he's always in the temple. And then suddenly, he can see. I mean, have you ever thought about that? Now, the amazing thing, I haven't been there yet. I'd love to be in such a place. But I told you the other week, didn't I, of a story only in the last few weeks when a little boy who had been blind all his life, eyes absolutely white, you know, occasionally you've seen it, haven't you? And in front of a crowd, that boy can suddenly see. Now, to me, I don't know about you, I'm not just now thinking of 2,000 years ago. I'm thinking about a few months ago, and I could even have been there. And I'm thinking, I'd like to see some of these things. What about, this is the really big one. What about when Jesus went and he was with his friends, Mary, Martha and Lazarus? It was about, I guess, this sort of time before Easter, really. Just a few weeks before Jesus was going to go to the cross. And he gets this message. I'm going to read you a big chunk out of the Bible of it, I think. Because the Bible does it rather well. It's John chapter 11. I'm missing a few bits out. I'm reading out of the New Living Translation if you want to follow. And I want you to catch hold of this story. But what I'm trying to say to us is, for goodness sake, let's not just think of these as stories, even true stories. I think there's something for... I want to get into something that causes me to expect to see these things happen in my day. John chapter 11 says this. A man named Lazarus was sick. He lived in Bethany with his sisters Mary and Martha. So the two sisters sent a message to Jesus telling him, Lord, your dear friend, your very dear friend is very sick. But when Jesus heard about it, he said, Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this. So although Jesus loved Martha, Mary and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. Finally, he said to his disciples, let's go back to Judea. But his disciples objected. Rabbi, they said, only a few days ago the people in Judea were trying to stone you. Are you going there again? Then he said, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I'll go and wake him up. The disciples said, a bit thick here, I'm afraid, Lord, if he's sleeping, he'll soon get better. They thought Jesus meant Lazarus is simply sleeping, but Jesus meant Lazarus had died. So he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there, for now you will really believe. Come, let's go and see him. Thomas, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let's go too and die with Jesus. He's a really encouraging man, that one. You know, let's go too and die with Jesus. You know, if he's going to get stoned, let's go as well. And when Jesus arrived at Bethany, he was told that Lazarus had already been in his grave for 4 days. Bethany was only a few miles down the road from Jerusalem, and many of the people had come to console Mary and Martha in their loss. And when Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him. But Mary stayed in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if only you'd been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus told her, "Your brother will rise again." "Yes," Martha said, "he will rise when everyone else rises at the last day." Jesus told her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live, even after dying. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never, ever die." "Do you believe this, Martha?" "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I've always believed you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world from God." And then she returned to Mary. She called Mary aside from the mourners and told her, "The teacher's here and wants to see you." So Mary immediately went to him. Jesus had stayed outside the village at the place where Martha met him. So when the people who were at the house consoling Mary saw her leave so hastily, they assumed she was going to Lazarus's grave to weep. So they followed her there. And when Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if only you'd been here, my brother would not have died." That's two sisters have said that so far. "If only you'd been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger welled up within him and he was deeply troubled. I actually don't know what that means. I've pondered it a bit and I haven't come up with an answer. But there was something about the whole business of death attacking his friend. There was something about this situation that deeply troubled Jesus. But he was ready to respond to it. It's interesting, actually, what other people said as well. Because Jesus said, "Where have you put him?" And they told him, "Lord, come and see." And it says Jesus wept. Jesus was so disturbed, so upset about this friend of his. And I think probably about the people all around him. It was far more than just his friend. And even the people who were standing nearby said, "See how much he loved him." And some said, "This man healed a blind man. Couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying?" Jesus was still angry when he arrived at the tomb, a cave with a stone rolled across its entrance. "Roll the stone aside," Jesus told them. But Martha, the dead man's sister, protested, "Lord, he's been dead for 4 days. The smell will be terrible." Jesus responded, "Didn't I tell you that you would see God's glory if you believe?" So they rolled the stone aside, and then Jesus looked up to heaven, listen to this, and said, "Father, thank you for hearing me. You always hear me, but I said it out loud for the sake of all these people standing here, so that they will believe you sent me." Then Jesus shouted, "Lazarus, come out!" And the dead man came out, his hands and feet bound in grave clothes, his face wrapped in a headcloth. Jesus told them, "Unwrap him and let him go." Many of the people who were with Mary believed in Jesus when they saw this happen. But some went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. Then the leading priests and Pharisees called the high council together. "What are we going to do?" they asked each other. "This man certainly performs many miraculous signs. If we allow him to go on like this, soon everyone will believe in him. Then the Roman army will come and destroy both our temple and our nation." Caiaphas, who was high priest at that time, said, "You don't know what you're talking about. You don't realize that it's better for you that one man should die for the people than for the whole nation to be destroyed." That's the chief priest prophesying what God intended to do. He didn't say this on his own. As high priest at that time, he was led to prophesy that Jesus would die for the entire nation, and not only for that nation, but to bring together and unite all the children of God scattered around the world. So from that time on, the Jewish leaders began to plot Jesus' death. And as a result, Jesus stopped his public ministry among the people and left Jerusalem. He went to a place near the wilderness, to the village of Ephraim, and stayed there with his disciples. My title for this morning is Disciples Believe What They See. Disciples Believe What They See. I've had this list of titles since the beginning of the year, all about disciples. And I thought of this story and actually a number of the other stories I've quoted earlier. Disciples believe what they see. Now, there's something about choosing in this believing. Something about choosing. Because you see, you can look at Dave's arms and you can look carefully and say, "I can still see some pink marks." But if you've seen it before, you will know it's very different. But you make a choice, don't you? You make a choice. What am I believing for? Any of you who are facing any kind of illness, you know perfectly well that there are ebbs and flows, there are moves about these things. You begin to think perhaps this is going to happen, perhaps that's going to happen. You see something, there's a move goes on. But in the end, you have to choose to believe what you see, even though sometimes you're actually saying to God, I'm really struggling with this, God, because, yeah, that's what I want to choose to believe, but actually there are other things floating around in my mind. It is allowed. It is allowed. If you like to, you know, it's no point in telling lies to yourself and bigging it all up if there's doubt. On the other hand, you have to say to yourself sometimes, but I'm choosing to believe that this is what God's doing. And I'm asking God to help me believe it. I'm asking God to help me hold on to it. Do you see what I mean? So we've surrounded with these little stories. Let's have Jeff's story next. Matt, would you? Jeff? Just lump it in with the recording and we'll tidy it later. This is a great story.
Well, who was here last Sunday morning in the Ashford Centre?
Plenty of us around, and one of the things that we did was we prayed for Jeff, because those of you who've seen Jeff ever since he's been knocking about on our Sunday mornings, he's always had these crutches and he's always had problems with his foot. For those of you who are visitors this morning, we'll just quickly tell you the background. So what was wrong with your foot, Jeff?
I had a severe bacterial infection in my foot and necrosis of the bone, which means bone death of the ankle.
Okay, so that those of you who aren't medical like me, that's not good. And I know that you had a number of tests, and the prognosis from the doctors wasn't particularly good. The last time you went to the doctors, they started giving you leaflets about amputation and things like that, which again is not a good leaflet to get your hands on, isn't it? But what was it that happened? Yeah, last week we were here, we prayed for you because you'd had some tests done, and we were praying for the second part, really, part two of your story. So tell us what happened this week.
So I went to see the doctor on Monday, and they said not only they were expecting to find a bacteria, quite a nasty bacteria. They found no bacteria at all. And they said, well, okay, this is fine, but we need you to stop antibiotics and make sure that you don't get ill again, which is usually 24 hours. So I've stopped antibiotics. I'm still not ill. So Tuesday I ring them up and we start physio. Categorically, amputation is no longer an option.
You've got to say it's good news, haven't you? You've got to say it's good news. If there are any other stories arising out of things, you might just mention John Hills while you're not on your feet. And then if there are any other stories arising out of things we've been praying, just come and tell Matt them while I'm talking, will you?
A couple of weeks ago, losing track, but... John Mills, I just glanced across and saw it. That obviously, John Hill. We were praying for shoulders. Those people, there's a number of people here who got problems with their shoulders, and John has had a problem for a while. I think it's years, but certainly over the last year, he had a real problem with his shoulder, and he's been receiving medication stuff from the doctor. And this was the week when he was due to go back to the doctors. Because they were going to drain the fluid that's on his shoulder. And he started to tell me about it, and I said, okay, that's enough information. It's to do with long needles and things, and it didn't sound pleasant. But this was the week that he was due to go and have that, so take off the fluid. But when he got there and they examined him, they said that the fluid had all gone. There wasn't any fluid there for them to take out anyway, and the infection that was in his shoulder had also disappeared, and there was nothing there for them to look at anymore. So they basically discharged him. So when he went back to work, everyone said, you know, how did it go? And he said it was really good. And they said, well, when do they want to see you next? And he said, well, they don't want to see me anymore. They've just discharged me, and that's it. So he was pretty excited. I saw him in Morrison's, and he was waving a piece of paper at me. So
very good.
It was great. It's fantastic news.
I just want you to notice three things off the back of the story I've just read you. Number one, Jesus deliberately acted. I read it several times, but if you notice in that story, it says ever so clearly, Jesus said ever so clearly, he waited until Lazarus was dead before he went. It wasn't, we'll wait and see. He made a conscious decision when they said, your friend is very ill, you need to come quickly. He waited 2 days for no good reason other than, he says, for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there, for now you will really believe. And then verse 11 says, it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this. And even publicly said, Father, thank you for hearing me. You always hear me, but I said it out loud for the sake of all these people standing here so that they will believe you sent me. Now, I believe God, Jesus, Holy Spirit, however you like to see it, is doing that very thing amongst us right now. So there seem to be things where Jesus is grabbing our attention and say, just look at this. I mean, you take Carl's story from last week, I think it was last week, where Carl found that he couldn't get away from the fact that God seemed to be popping up in various places, whether it was the word Rolls-Royce on a bus or whatever it was. There were things that just kept popping up one after the other, and he's still not told us the whole story. But it's like God's saying, just take a look at this. I'm doing this deliberately to grab your attention. And then you've got Dave, who's really very poorly. I mean, you know, he really was ill on that first day sending his texts out. It was serious. But as a passing phase within an illness, suddenly something that he suffered for years starts to move. And it's like God saying, have you noticed this? And then we begin to pray for Jeff. And, you know, amputation it's not fun, is it? You know, it's not the sort of thing you'd have at the top of your list. And then suddenly, everything that they've said disappears and no infection. But we'll give you some antibiotics just in case. And then, well, we'll drop them off just to prove there's nothing happening. And nothing happens. And it feels to me like Jesus is saying, have you noticed this? Have you noticed this? And at the same time, there are other things that we're pressing up against on an ongoing basis. You know, we haven't got all the answers. We haven't got all the miracles we're looking for. There are more things. But somehow, if Jesus does that and grabs your attention, it does something to you and how you respond. Secondly, my first point is Jesus is active in this. My second point is disciples are affected. Disciples are affected. I mean, the simplest statement wasn't about the 12 disciples. It just says many of the people who were with Mary believed in Jesus when they saw this happen. Many of the people, it says. Disciples are people who are in a process. They're looking, they're following, they're learning. We're all disciples. We're at different stages in a journey. We remain disciples right to the end of our lives. And let's remain moving disciples. Let's remain getting closer to Jesus. Let's never be settled with what we've got. But these things affect disciples. But I believe, and this is why I'm saying this to you, I believe you have to choose to get maximum effect out of these things. Because there is something that goes on in your mind and mine that some people call cynicism and some people call skepticism that slides through your mind because you can actually think of other reasons why certain things could have happened. And it is possible to sit on the edge of your seat and say, well, we'll wait and see. It is possible to do that, isn't it? But you see, if you're in Jeff's situation, if you're wise, you don't do that. You say, this is good. I'll have some more. And I want to encourage us to be doing that, not just for one another, but for everyone else. Most of you know somebody who needs a touch from God right now. And I want to say to us, let's move on it. Let's move on it. If you want to do it on the quiet for a start, do it. But then if God gives you a nudge, do something with that. Your friend in your office who came in and said, Jesus Christ, my back aches, which sounds like a prayer, doesn't it? He's all right, isn't he? So, you know, that's an unusual way of praying, but, well, perhaps we do do that. Sounds all right, like a prayer to me. But there would be opportunities like that. I'm looking for some more stories. I'm looking for some more stories. Jesus is active. Disciples are affected. There's just one thing I also need to mention. Enemies are active too. You see, have you noticed? I read right through to the end of that story. Did you notice what happened? When Jesus has just brought somebody back from death to life, the most amazing thing that could possibly happen, there are two reactions. There are people who believe in Jesus, but there are others who say, we'll go and tell the priests about this. And the priest's reaction, and be fair to them, because you see, we are apt from our perspective to think bad guys, but be fair. You see, they were watching over their nation. They had quite a decent situation because the Romans were in Israel, but actually they were letting Israel behave like Israel most of the time. So the temple was functioning as it always had done, and the priests were doing their stuff, and God was still being honoured as far as they could see. But they thought that if the people all turned to Jesus, and there's some kind of rebellion, the Romans will come in and squash it, and that will be the end of their civilization as they know it. That's what they were afraid of. And isn't it fascinating that Caiaphas, the high priest, the Bible actually says he prophesied. The Bible says when he declared it is better for one man to die for the whole nation, that's what God said. That's the salvation motif. That's what it's all about. But at the same time, you've got enemies saying, we can't have this kind of thing. It must stop. And actually, that's still true. That is still true. So in your situation and mine, Jesus is active. Jesus is grabbing your attention and mine. Number two, disciples are affected. And if they've got any sense, disciples believe what they see. But thirdly, there are enemies around who would like to rubbish everything that's happening. And that has always been the case and it always will be. But we have to make our choice to decide which way we're going with it. And we have to be determined, I think. And there are those days when you think, I'm struggling with this. That's okay. It is okay. But actually, we need to believe what was said. Because disciples still believe what they see. Still believe what they say. I believe we are going to see more. In fact, I think if we open our eyes, we're already seeing it. I mean, there's only a handful of us. We've got a few good stories around already, haven't we? This isn't just about signs, by the way. I don't want you to all get into the habit of thinking, I'll ask for a sign from God before I make my decision, you know. Shall I wear the blue shirt or the green shirt? Which one comes as I reach out into the wardrobe? That's not what I'm talking about with signs. In fact, you know, even Gideon's sign, he should have known better, really, because God had told him what he was going to do. I'm talking about these situations where God just shows you something. And you think, oh, God's around. That's the sort of thing I'm thinking of. And that's going to happen all the time. But we need to choose to believe what we see. There'll always be an element of faith in such responses. You know, you've got to exercise your faith. If you're going to believe what the doctors have said to Jeff, he's still got to act in faith, hasn't he? He's still got to say, God, let it be. And we still continue to pray. The enemy is still active. The Bible tells us there's an enemy who's out to mess us up. It uses this phrase, a prowling lion. Because he doesn't want us to believe what we see. Doesn't want us to believe. Do you know what John said about that gospel that I've read a bit of? He said this, the disciples saw Jesus do many other miraculous signs in addition to the ones recorded in this book. These are written so that you may continue to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing in him, you will have life by the power of his name. That's what it's about. That's why John wrote his book. That's why I'm drawing your attention to it this morning, because it is happening, and it's vital that you and I, for ourselves first, believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, but then actually it impels us to begin to find ways of sharing that good news with other people, because it's vital. 2 weeks' time, church celebrates once again that Jesus went to the cross and that he rose again. It's not just a story. It's vital for you and me.